And we're joined now, as always, by Riley Gates, a Go Paracat, to talk K-State athletics. Riley, have a good Happy New Year. You brought in the year with style?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I had myself a pretty solid night. I'm not going to lie. It was a good time, except I spent, like, the whole day just chilling, doing nothing, you know, New Year's Eve day. And then I went to church because it was a church day, and then went to dinner with some friends, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be a great night. It's going to be a lot of fun. And literally as I'm at dinner, I get an update on Dean Wade's health status, and then I get wind of a basketball player joining the team at semester, and I'm like, I'm in a booth at Applebee's right now. I don't have my laptop. So I'm, like, furiously typing on my phone trying to get something out there. So it was pretty fun, but I also had to work a little bit, so it was a little bit of both.
Work never ends is what you're trying to tell me.
Apparently
so. Well, it is the ever-changing world of sports, that's for sure. And the changes certainly have happened at Kansas State in the football program, as we talked about with Coach Kleiman taking over the reins. But since you and I have last spoke here on the Sports Ticket, he's, for the most part, filled out his coaching staff. Tell us about the coaching staff he has assembled and then what Sean Snyder's role supposedly will be.
Yeah. And correct me if I'm mistaken, but we haven't spoken since any coaches have been hired, have we?
I think, like, we Kleiman, we did. We talked since Kleiman.
Right. Kleiman, but we didn't do any of
that. Nope, you're right.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously he goes and he hires four coaches from his staff at North Dakota State. And I think that he's got a pretty good core guys that he's bringing with him. Courtney Messingham was his offensive coordinator at North Dakota State. And I think that he has proven in his time in North Dakota State that he can run a very efficient offense. He's also going to bring in Connor Riley, who is the offensive line coach there. And in North Dakota State, as we know, has had one of the most productive running games in the FCS level. And I guess I don't really know where it translates to in terms of FBS rankings, but I imagine it's pretty high up there. And then Jason Ray and Joe Klanderman are also coming along. So I think he's bringing some pretty good coaches from North Dakota State that know how to win. They know talent there, and he's comfortable with these guys. You know, he's comfortable with knowing what they're capable of doing, what they can coach, and the type of personnel that they bring in when they go out and recruit and things like that. So I think the coaches that he picked from North Dakota State, I'm really pretty comfortable with them. And then the defensive coaches are, you know, the kind of the next three that he hired. Ted, and I'm still not sure on the pronunciation exactly, but Ted Monachino, I believe is how you say, the new defensive coordinator. He's got some NFL background, and I think that's really interesting. He coached Terrell Suggs, and he's got one or two Super Bowl rings, I believe, and he's a winner. Obviously, the Super Bowl ring speaks to that, but I think that there's some questions out there. You know, he was let go from some jobs, and I don't know if he necessarily I don't know as where he stands in terms of prepping a D1 defensive unit in 2019. I don't think anybody knows that, just because he's not exactly a prepared or experienced coach this past season. But I'll tell you what, one guy I'm really excited about is Van Malone, the cornerback coach that he's bringing in. Currently a defensive quality guy or something like that at Mississippi State. And Van Malone's going to give him the inroads into Texas. Van Malone has huge ties in the state of Texas. He's from there. He played there. He coached in the state. He coached in Oklahoma, and he's got those connections. So I'm pretty excited for Van Malone to join the staff, and I think he's going to bring in some recruiting minds right away. So that's a lot of information I know right there. It's kind of tough to break down seven or eight guys right there, but I think he's getting a good core of coaches brought in right now that, you know, if they can translate it well, K-State's going to be in a pretty good spot.
Yeah, I like what he's done. I really do. I like that he has a mix of a few of the coaches, of course, with Siler and Klein. And you've got a mix of those younger guys to go along with the different staff members, as you mentioned, and I couldn't agree more with you with Coach Malone. And that's a big part of the coaching staff, is having somebody that can recruit. Certainly you can have a whole bunch of X's and O's guys that know philosophy and strategy, but if you don't know how to get the kids to come to Kansas State, you're gonna have a hard time being successful.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the one thing that I'm very pleased to see Chris Kleiman do here is yeah, he did keep Blake Seiler and he kept Colin Klein, and those are obviously guys from the old regime, and they obviously have the K-State connection, but he didn't go heavy on K-State guys, and I think there were some coaches he could have kept here. You know, I think Charlie Dickey is one of the best offensive line coaches in the entire NCAA, and I think he's probably going to land somewhere and do really well, but he just didn't fit into Chris Kleiman's system, you know. I think that Brian Norwood is a fantastic secondaries coach. You saw K-State's pass defense improved tremendously, and I believe it was fourth or fifth in terms of total offense allowed. I mean, this is a really pretty solid defense behind Blake Seiler. So, and obviously Brian Norwood too. But I think that it was good to hit the reset button, to get a new change, get some new faces in here. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you're trying to separate yourself from Bill Snyder, but also at the same time, it shows that you're comfortable enough to go out on your own way. You're comfortable enough to make your own hires. And that's what I'm pretty excited about Chris Kleiman, is he didn't feel roped into Bill Snyder. He didn't feel obligated to keep certain people on. Now, what does that mean for Sean Snyder? That's a pretty unanswered question right now. You know, I think it's pretty well known at this point that he's not going to be on the on-field duties. I think some people have kind of reported that per se, but you know, who knows? Honestly, at this point, I'm not penciling him in anywhere. I don't think they're going to have a special teams coach is the thing. If they were going to have a special teams coach, I think he'd absolutely get the job. But I don't think that Chris Kleiman is going to hire a special teams coach. I think he's going to hire, from what we're hearing, you know, he might hire another, like a defensive tackle coach. He might hire a second linebacker coach, perhaps, and really kind of attack that defensive side and then split the special teams up into multiple parts, multiple areas among guys. But I don't think Sean Snyder's going to be on an on-field job here. The question, though, is where is it? You know, someone has reported, I believe it was maybe ESPN, I can't remember, that he was going to have a Jerry Kill-type role at K-State. And, you know, to the outsider, that makes sense. But to people that know what Jerry Kill was, Jerry Kill's main responsibility was to, for lack of a better term, break up the fight between Bill Snyder and John Curry. I mean, they weren't happy with each other. And Jerry Kill was kind of that mediator there. So I don't really know what Sean Snyder's role would be if that is, in fact, what he's getting, because obviously, Chris Kleiman and Gene Taylor have a good relationship. There's no need for something like that. So I don't really know what Sean Snyder's going to do right now. And frankly, I'm going to be blunt here. Go out and do something else, man. I know your parents are here. I know your family's here. And I know that this is all you've known forever. But if you really want to be a coach someday, if you really want to be respected in the coaching profession, go out and make a name for yourself. Don't do something because, yes, you know, dad got you the job. I don't have a problem with people, you know, utilizing their connections in life. But go out and do something different, man. K-State doesn't owe you anything. And so I don't understand at this point why Sean Snyder doesn't spread his wings a little bit. Go get a different job and see what you can do in the coaching world.
I agree. If he wants to be a head coach somewhere, that's what he needs to do. But maybe he's okay with, you know, that time has passed and I'm not going to be a head coach because he didn't make that jump when he probably should have done it, you know, 5 to 10 years ago. Maybe it's a little bit too late in his mind based on his age.
I mean, it could be that, yeah. And maybe, like you said, maybe he just doesn't want to be a head coach. And I guess if he doesn't want to be one, he doesn't want to be one. But I think it gives me the vibe that he feels he's entitled to Kansas State because of what his father did. And he can't keep riding his dad's success forever. And I think that that's what's really starting to get K-State fans frustrated, is that he has this job, he has this role in the university, and there's no real reason. You know, he punted really well when he was at K-State. Okay, well, I can make a case that if Bill Snyder hadn't been the coach, he wouldn't have gotten the opportunity to do it at the Big 8 level. So I don't mean to bag on Sean so much, but it feels like K-State's sitting here and trying to create a role for him just to keep people happy. And to me, that's not the way you should run your athletic department.
I'll rework what I said. I think it comes down to, well, one, maybe at his age, at 49, he's like, you know what, I don't want to have to start lower on the totem pole. Or translation, I don't have to pay those dues. And let's be honest, Chris Kleiman's done that. That's why Chris Kleiman's at Kansas State, because if Chris Kleiman would have just held on as a special teams coach or something and stayed at one place forever, and he didn't get moved up to offensive or defensive coordinator, I don't think he expected to be a head coach anywhere. I mean, come on, let's be honest about it. So I'm with you, and I agree with you on all of that, and it'll be interesting to see what kind of role he has, if it's even anything of significance. Go Powercats, Riley Gates, our guest, and it's a special appearance with Riley today on a Wednesday, usually on a Tuesday, but yesterday was New Year's Day, and it's brought to you by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit and Heineken Electric Residential and Commercial Electric Service Company. All right, let's turn our attention to the basketball team. Kamau Stokes catches some heat. I know some K-State fans that aren't big fans of Kamau Stokes. And granted, you know, last year he didn't play well, but he also was hurt for a good portion of last year. And Dean Wade's out with the injury. K-State struggles offensively. Without Kamau Stokes, this team is 8-4 at best. He has won a couple of games with his shooting, and of course the other day 20 points, goes over 1,000 for his career. I'm not saying Kamau Stokes is the greatest guard in the world. I'm not saying that, but I will say that all this criticism, and it happens with coaches or players, whoever it might be, when they're not doing well, you see all the criticism. When they suddenly do well, crickets, because people don't want, those same people that criticize don't want to throw the kid a bone and say, hey, that kid's really been important to our team and helped us win a game. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree to an extent. I think Kamau Stokes is one of the most 50-50 players in the entire country right now. Because, you know, you mentioned that they're 8-4 without him, and that's probably true. But then I could also make the case that, you know, if he doesn't go 3-for-10 against Vanderbilt, you know, they blow out and it's not even an interesting game. Or if, you know, he doesn't do, you know, I don't have his stats here in front of me. He's had a few games here this year where you just want to go, what are you doing? You're a senior point guard. You're turning the ball over 9 times a game. You can't be doing that. And so I think that, yeah, he does get some unfair criticism at times. And then I'm guilty of it too. And I like Kamau Stokes a lot. To me, he's one of the most underappreciated players on this roster, because he's on a 3-man senior class that features Dean Wade and Barry Brown, mm-hmm. who, as we know, get all the spotlight and all the attention. And here's Kamau Stokes just quietly, you know, doing his thing and really not getting any recognition. So, you know, I want him to be a more consistent player. I want him to be able to not get that criticism at times. But like I said, you know, a few mistakes here and there is fine. But if you're a senior point guard, you got to know when it's your game and when it's not your game.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're turning the ball over 8-9 times a game, it's not your game. If you're missing the first 4 shots you take, I understand shooters keep shooting. But sometimes you just got to sit back and go, okay, tonight's not my night. We'll let somebody else do it, and I'll try to get it on the next one. And I don't think that's what Kamau – I think that has escaped Kamau in his 4 years here. I don't think he's ever been able to fully comprehend that sometimes you just can't shoot your way out of a funk. You just got to ride it, and you just got to have a bad game. And unfortunately, it kind of reflects into his career, his reputation, and that's kind of why he gets criticized when he has those tough outings.
Yeah, those are all fair points. I totally agree with you, and I'm not saying that he is the best player on the team, but he has been streaky. He's been that way his whole career in regards to shooting the basketball, and his decision-making has left something to be desired. You look at his overall stats this year, turnover assist ratio virtually the exact same as last year. His assists are up a little bit, his turnover's up a little bit, but he's playing more minutes, of course, since they're a little shorthanded. His three-point percentage is better quite a bit from last year at 38%, but then again, he has been streaky, as we talked about. I guess the reason I brought this up is Kansas State needs Kamau Stokes because they don't have a lot of other options, and also because they struggle so much to score. And so when he is able to hit a shot or two, that's usually the time to keep going to Kamau, because he is that streaky of a shooter.
Yeah, you know what? Let's take all of Kamau's criticism and let's put it aside for a second, and why don't we, you know, maybe criticize, you know, Cartier Jada and Mike McGrow a little bit more. Why don't we criticize Xavier Sneed? Now, that's not exactly fair because he's been kind of doing everything. He can't always score. But, you know, it feels like he's taking the brunt of it when Cartier Jada is kind of sitting back and, you know, going 2-for-5 and scoring 4 points. And I understand Cartier is not Dean Wade. He's not Barry Brown. But, you know, the thing is, this team prided itself last year in the NCAA tournament on the fact that they had 8 or 9 guys that could step up and could make plays, you know. They don't beat Creighton without Mike McGurl.
Right.
Who would have thought that at the beginning of the year? But now Mike McGurl is non-existent, and suddenly we've just credited it to, oh, he's in a funk right now. Well, no, I think he caught fire one game.
Yes.
So there's no reason to blame Kamau, a guy like Kamau Stokes. There's no reason to you know, put the blame on the guys in the spotlight. Like, I think it needs to be split up a little bit more. Nobody on this team is playing incredibly well. Even Barry Brown is not at his peak, I wouldn't say. And that's really unfortunate to see a team that was ranked number 12 to start the year is now trying to claw back into the top 25 simply because four upperclassmen can't get the job done.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the simplest way to put it. Dean Wade, granted he's hurt, Barry Brown, Kamal Soaks, and Xavier Sneed have not done a good enough job to earn a top 25 ranking. And I think that's pretty unfortunate because I don't think there's any other team in the country that you could look at and say, this team went to the Elite Eight, returned everybody, has a ton of upperclassmen, and just can't figure it out. And to me, that doesn't make any sense. And so that's why this team as a whole, you know, not Kamal, not Xavier, not Mike, anybody like that, nobody has been more disappointing than the other. It's been a disappointing team effort as a whole in my eyes. And unfortunately, I think that's probably going to be the case here as we get going in Big 12 play. I don't think it's going to be the prettiest of starts. I think K-State's probably going to struggle a little bit. And, you know, at the end of the day, this is, as I've said from day one, this is the same team as last year. And last year's team went on a three-game winning streak in March. I mean, that's what it was. At the end of the day, it was a three-game winning streak in March at the right time. And credit to them for beating the teams that they did. But to me, this is no different than the team that went 0-7 against the top three teams in the Big 12 last year.
Yeah, it's basically the same team. You added Austin Trice. That's really the only difference.
And he's not even playing that
I know. He hasn't been the impact player that they thought he might be. I'm with you. I totally agree with you. Plus, you got Wade hurt, but Wade was hurt during the NCAA tournament last year, so there shouldn't be excuses now. Although, you're not going to have three games, you know, in the tournament without Dean. You're going to have to go, you know, for a ways without Dean in Big 12 play, which leads me to my next question. Where are we standing with Dean Wade and his status, and when can we expect to see him back on the court?
It sounds like he's getting close. He's out of the boot and he's walking some. But unfortunately, as anybody who's ever experienced an injury knows, you can't go until you're 100%, especially when you're putting as much pressure on your body as a guy like Dean Wade is. I think he's far from 100%. And unfortunately, I don't think Dean Wade's ever going to be at 100%. I don't mean that he's not going to play again. I just mean I think he's going to get to the point where he says, I'm good enough to go. And that'll be fine, but he'll never be the Dean Wade that we know he can be. I would expect Dean Wade to be back, you know, maybe by late January, I would guess. I think he's probably still got this week, next week, and maybe one more after that of recovery time. I just think anything quicker than 3 weeks, you're probably rushing it a little bit. And we saw Kamal Soaks do that last year when he broke his foot. He came back probably 3 or 4 games too early and was never himself after that. So, you know, you got to make sure Dean Wade is healthy and good to go, but you're going to need him. You're going to need him on the floor as quick as possible. So Bruce Weber's going to have to make a decision. Look, I'm looking at their first 5 games here, and I don't see a single game where I go, okay, they might be able to get by. You know, they're going to open up with Texas tonight, and I think Texas, despite being 8-4, is a pretty good team right now. And I think they've just played one of the tougher schedules in the country. I believe it's 33rd. And then you've got to go to Texas Tech, and we saw Texas Tech almost beat Duke. Okay, well, you're not going to win that game, I don't think. You're going to play West Virginia at home, and then you're going to go to Iowa State, and then you're going to go to Oklahoma, who is probably the most surprising team in the country right now.
Yeah,
that's a tough 5 games to start, and I don't think you're going to have Dean Wade for any of those. And so I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, they're going to have guys step up. But unfortunately, Dean Wade, I don't think he's going to be part of that. And that's going to really, really put them in a tight spot, especially, you know, when McCall Mawine goes up against, guys like Sagabaugh Kanate at West Virginia, and he picks up 2 fouls right out of the gate. It's tough for me to see him getting off to a really hot start here in the first 5.
I'll tell you the date I think he'll be back. This is just a guess on my part. I don't think he's back until February 2nd. February 2nd, and that'd be the earliest at Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
I don't see him back. I mean, you look January 26th at A&M. That's a non-conference game. Would it be a nice, you know, addition to your resume with a win? Yeah,
that A&M team's bad.
Right. And it's not a conference game. So to me, if he isn't back by January 22nd at home against Tech, then you don't even worry about the 26th, and you get him back for February 2nd, Oklahoma State. Then you got a big game against KU on February 5th, so you can get him back into the fray February 2nd on the road. And then, of course, you beat Kansas, whether it's at home or on the road. That's a huge feather in your cap for your tournament resume. And that leads me to my next question, and that is, we've been talking about it before we had you on the show today, where do we think Kansas State's going to end up? And I think it's tough to say because we don't know the Dean Wade situation, how effective he'll be when he does come back and play, if he does come back and play at all. As you said, he probably won't be 100%. And so when you look at K-State and their situation have where they really struggle to score, but their defense keeps them in games, this could be the same team as we said last year, as you just mentioned earlier, that, hey, 10-8 in the Big 12, 9-9, 10-8, and they're on that proverbial NCAA tournament bubble, depending on whether or not they pull off a couple of big wins in conference.
Yeah, you know, I don't think that – I think, let's say, he's back on that February 2nd, like you suggested there, predicted there. It's going to take Dean a few games because, yes, you know, physically you're not just going to come back from an injury right away. And then knowing Dean Wade mentally, he's just not going to do it. And there's no way he's going to step on the floor in game one and two and be this threatening guy. So, you know, I don't think you're going to be in a – like I said, I don't think you're going to get off to a very hot start because you're going to be without him. And then I think even when he comes back, you're going to be, you know, maybe struggling to get it going there a little bit. I don't see any way – look, I put this team ceiling at third at the start of the year. I thought that people were way over the top, you know, in terms of saying that, hey, they're going to, you know, beat Kansas and they're going to win the Big 12. That was ridiculous. Anybody that thought that was just – buying into the
drinking the Kool-Aid, drinking the Kool-Aid from last year, from March run, yeah.
And I get it, but you could not honestly have believed they were going to be like that. I think the ceiling is third, and I think the floor is anywhere from, you know, maybe four to eight, nine, maybe. Mm-hmm. I know that's a very wide range of guesses. That if you put, you know, gun to my head right now, maybe pick a record, I think I'd probably have to say 9-9. Yeah. I don't think I'm confident enough to say 10-8, and I don't think that I don't think I'm negative enough to go 8-10. And 9-9 kind of seems like that happy middle where you're going to beat, you know, teams like TCU maybe twice. You're going to beat Baylor maybe twice, but you're going to lose to Kansas twice. You're going to lose to Texas Tech twice, and you know, at the end of the day, that's what K-State basketball is, right? They beat the teams that are kind of meh, and then when they face the good teams, they don't really meet expectations. And I hate to be so negative, you know, especially with 18 games left in the conference slate, but I haven't seen anything from this team with or without Dean Wade that makes me sit here and go, that's a team that can make some noise, can make something happen when Big 12 play starts.
All right, so let's revolve back to Kamau Stokes. Kamau Stokes is averaging 33 minutes per game on the floor, 33 out of 40 minutes. If Kamau Stokes averages 33 minutes per game in Big 12 play, is that a good or a bad thing?
Oh, man.
I'll answer it first. I'll say that's a bad thing. Here's why. Because of what you said earlier. That means that Jada and McGurl and other guys aren't able to take a few more minutes.
Yeah. And it also, I guess, depends who does he go with to start when Dean's back. I don't think it's great. I probably can't say it's good.
Yeah, right.
But
what are your other options, you know? They just don't have a lot of options.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah.
And the last year I kept saying, you know, if Barry Brown plays 38 minutes a game, he's going to sputter out and he's going to crumble, but he never did.
He didn't.
And so that was kind of confusing to me, I guess. I think you probably got to say it's a bad thing if Kamau's playing 33. Like you said, it probably goes to speak more to the fact that the other guys haven't stepped up and that they regressed into the role players that they truly are. At the end of the day, I'd like to say it's a good thing. I'd like to say that if Kamau got 33 a game, he could maybe make some noise and be something special in this final season. But I guess we just haven't seen enough on tape to believe he can do it.
Yep, I'm with you on that. All right, a prediction tonight. K-State win or lose against Texas in the home opener tonight at 8 o'clock?
Man, I think I'm going to say they're going to win. It doesn't feel to me like they'll start 0-2 because I don't think they'll beat Texas Tech on Saturday. Mm-hmm. I'll say win, but it wouldn't shock me if they lose this game because Texas has a few big guys that I think are going to cause some issues down low. And K-State, I was doing, you know, research yesterday. K-State's got like the 66th best strength of schedule, which is pretty good. I mean, compared to what they were last year, yeah. 66 is remarkable. But I believe Texas has number 32 or 27 or something like that. They're in that top 40 range. So they're battle tested. You know, this is a team that beat North Carolina. So I definitely wouldn't be shocked if they came into Manhattan and won tonight.
I'll take K-State 58-56. They win by two, low-scoring defensive affair. To me, in order to win, they got to keep the game lower scoring. It gets higher scoring.
Yeah, that,
I don't like their chances.
They got to start scoring more points. This is maddening.
Yes,
I mean,
they do.
It's just it's annoying at this point.
You can't count on your defense to show up every single night. You're right about that. KU going to win it again then for the 15th straight year? You see anybody knocking them off?
No.
Okay. So it's the same old, same old. We can replay this thing a year from now. We could go back and play it last year. K-State is going to be on the bubble and be a middle-tier team, 10-8, 9-9, and KU is going to win the Big 12. It's like nothing's changed year in and year out.
It's Groundhog Day.
It is. It feels like it, doesn't it? All right.
You got to be ignorant if you pick against KU at this point. That's all I'm saying.
You got to be crazy if you're picking against KU at this point. I'm with you. Time for the off-the-wall question. I had this conversation with somebody the other day. We were in Topeka visiting family, and my wife, back when she was in college, when she started at Washburn, she worked at Glory Days Pizza. And so she said, hey, we need to go to Glory Days Pizza. And back to the place she worked at years ago, and I said, well, I don't know if it would be a good sign if you see somebody you worked with still there 25 years later, unless they own the joint, which there wasn't, so that was okay. And try Glory Days Pizza. I've had it before, but it's been a while, and it's good. I like it. It's not my favorite. So my question to you is, what is your favorite pizza joint? What's your favorite place to go eat pizza?
Well, when I got here to Manhattan, obviously there was, and but what, there's only Pizza Hut and, you know, the kind of gas stations, whatever.
Right.
Obviously, you guys know that.
Yep.
So when I got here, having places like Domino's and Papa John's was awesome, and I was a big Papa John's guy. However, I have come to really enjoy eating AJ's Pizza here in Manhattan.
Okay.
It's really good, and they serve it at the Hilo, which is like a bar in Aggieville, and they serve the pizza there. So that's my favorite pizza, I think, because I haven't gotten to go out and do a bunch of, you know, big, like go to Chicago and try a bunch of like those type of pizza places, if that makes any sense.
Okay, what kind of pizza you get at AJ's? What's your favorite dish?
Well, I like to get just a pepperoni pizza.
Okay.
That's really good.
Okay.
But at the Hilo, when they serve their pizza, they also do some crazy pizzas. Like, you know, you can get like a chicken Alfredo pizza. You know, if you're into buffalo chicken, they'll do that. Like, I know that's not crazy, but like they got a little bunch of like different ones in there, and that's really good too. So it's a really good place to try.
I'm gonna have to try that. I'm writing down your recommendation right now. Next time I'm at Aggieville, I'm gonna have to try
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely,
that sounds good to me. All right, tell everybody what you're working on right now, because you talked about how you're busy and New Year's and everything else. What are you working on now?
Yeah, you know, obviously basketball is getting cooking here, and we'll have probably 2-3 games a week to cover. So that'll be a lot of it, but you know, and this is some pretty low profile information right now that I really haven't made too public. But here in about an hour or so from now, so I should probably get my stuff around. We're getting in the car. We're getting in the car and we're headed south. We're going to Frisco because on Saturday North Dakota State takes on Eastern Washington for the FCS National Championship game.
That's right.
And we're going to get to talk to Chris Kleiman, to Courtney Messingham, Connor Riley, all those guys, and cover the national championship down there. So unfortunately, I won't be at the Texas game tonight. I won't be at the Texas Tech game on Saturday, but I'm pretty excited to get to know K-State's new coaches a little bit more.
That'll be awesome. Look forward to reading all about that, and safe travels down to Frisco and back. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks, Riley.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Wood.
Take care, buddy. That's Riley Gates. GoPowerCat.com. Check out all of their work. They do a wonderful job. And Riley's appearance here on The Sports Ticket is always brought to you by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit and Heineken Electric Residential and Commercial Electric Service Company. Big 12 slate tonight. It is Texas Tech at West Virginia at 6 o'clock. Iowa State at Oklahoma State at 8 o'clock tonight. Texas at K-State tonight in Manhattan at 8. Oklahoma at KU tonight at 8. Pregame at 7:30 on Z96.3 Lake. That's the first night of Big 12 men's basketball action.